We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28, and to donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or visit preborn.com/AFR.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. It is Wednesday, August 5th, and yet another Democrat socialist is poised to win a primary, this time in the Wisconsin governor's race. And the candidate, the gubernatorial candidate, Francesca Hong, is facing scrutiny over past social media posts, and she should, because the posts that are shared by Republicans and also CNN, and you know, they've made their rounds on social media, include criticisms of Thanksgiving, calling to abolish Thanksgiving, comments about Culver's, and calls to abolish the state Senate. Hong has described the posts as jokes. Of course, that's the only excuse that anyone can provide for such nonsense, and accused her opponent, who is current Congressman Tom Tiffany, who we've had frequently on this program, of manufacturing outrage. So political observers suggest the controversy could motivate Republican voters ahead of the primary. But Hong went on CNN and was asked about her post canceling Thanksgiving. And this is what she had to say. Cut three.
One thing that they brought up as well was a post from you in 2021 where you said Americans should cancel Thanksgiving, should have done this in 1621. The post has been deleted. Republicans have been highlighting it. Do you still believe that Thanksgiving should be canceled?
I'm a chef, and one of the first meals that I made that was for the community when I was 16 was a Thanksgiving meal. You know, I always think my hospitality background in owning a restaurant for 7-8 years, that bringing folks around the table to share conversation and build community is always a good thing. But Thanksgiving is also a time that's incredibly painful for many people in our communities. And so I think there I wanted to make sure that people understood that there are multiple views, but views can evolve. And the position that I'm running for right now, and I think my background as a chef, will actually help me become a better governor that's able to bring more people to the table.
All right, so to be clear, her post said, cancel Thanksgiving, should have done this in 1621 if it takes a worldwide pandemic for us to realize we should stop celebrating colonialism and the original super spreader event that killed indigenous folks, spelled F-O-L-X, and women, so be it. That was posted in November of 2020. And, you know, this just shows the worldview of a lot of these candidates that are rising to the top. And this isn't some just, you know, kind of sidelined candidate that we can, you know, look to and say, wow, there are some really weird people that are up on the Democrat side. Hong is the leading candidate on the Democrat side for the gubernatorial primary. I mean, that's how ridiculous the Democrat ticket has become, that someone with this worldview and mindset, who is an avowed socialist, who doesn't clearly does not share any sort of American values, is very divisive, is incredibly racist, now is likely, after next week, the primary is August 11th, likely going to be at the top of the ticket for Democrats. So let's welcome in our good friend Steve Dace, who is, of course, host of the Steve Dace Show over at The Blaze. And Steve, this just continues to show the national divide of worldview, because someone like this, who may get into office in the highest office in the state, who could run the state, who has this kind of worldview. I mean, this isn't just, wow, this is a crazy person posting, you know, some racist comments on social media. I mean, this is incredibly serious. And the fact that some pollsters are suggesting that this is a good environment overall nationally for Democrats this cycle is frankly really disturbing. What do you make of the rise of these socialists and otherwise, you know, lunatic candidates?
Inevitable. It was inevitable. I mean, this is the trend line we've seen in the culture, and not always. I mean, pardon me, you live in a state where, you know, every now and then you'll have a situation where you'll have, as my friend Oran McIntyre describes, the two wings, the total state on the left or the Red Caesar on the right. And you live in a state with a Red Caesar where their governance is so strong that it will move the culture with them. Now, the overall culture in Florida is way to the right of where it was a decade ago, way to the right. I mean, a decade ago, a mayor of Tallahassee, who has been caught in now numerous drug-induced orgies and binges, almost became the governor of the state by about 30,000 votes. So what's happened to the culture of that state, that gentleman almost became governor, and then now you think of Florida as a shining beacon. It wasn't some great revival. Ron DeSantis happened. Now, it's very rare. The opposite's happened in places like California. It's happening now in Michigan, depending on how that election goes. But this is what's happened in California, Oregon, Washington. These are one-party states where the total state is essentially, taken over. And sometimes they do it with ham-fisted policies, just flat-out stealing elections, like what's been done in California. You just saw with Spencer Pratt. And then there's other situations like in Washington State, for example, that they figured out that there are people like low-tax socialism. So just get rid of the state income tax and then do a more benign form of it. But the policies look very similar to create one-party states. And so those are exceptions. But most of the time in human history, politics flows downstream from culture. And if you look at the cultural trend, Jenna, this is what has already happened. They've already been saying this kind of stuff out loud. I mean, this woman's life is an example of it. First, she said this stuff out loud, and then she ran for office. What's fascinating about all of this is what really is going to be the reaction on the right, because the left, the Democratic Party, is just an overt now manifestation of a demonic construct. That's essentially what it is. I mean, it's a party running on doctrines of demons now, just out in the open. And even the way they'll try to explain it away will be very cunning and demonic. And it'll sound foolish to people like us who are spirit-filled. We'll sit and say to ourselves, how moronic would people be to have to buy this? Okay, and we'll say things like, yeah, the economy is not doing as well as we all thought it was going to do, after 24. But, you know, still, groceries are the cheapest they are here than almost any other industrialized nation on Earth. Why are people voting for communism? Because, again, we represent an entirely different worldview and kingdom. And I think that we have to understand what we're up against is also an entirely different worldview and kingdom, and it's a religion. I mean, when you watch people in the WNBA, they've been handed a $1 trillion golden goose. And when they refuse to not even take the eggs, but to smash them, and because they so believe in their ideology instead, we don't understand that, because the last era of Christendom, frankly, was constantly looking for third ways and compromises and ways to still have, one foot in the world and one foot in the kingdom. And to maybe we were the editors of God's word that he's been looking for to water it down and make it slick and cool this whole time. They've actually got our kind of religious devotion over there, the kind of devotion that our Puritan forefathers had, that the early church fathers had to defeat the Roman Empire over the course of three centuries. That's the kind of devotion they have. The only thing that causes this kind of devotion in our species is religion. And that's why it's very important that you have the right one. And that's what we're up against. And I will be more than fascinated to see what our own response to this will be on our side. But I'm here to tell you right now, if you keep spinning your wheels in Iran, and we've got a deal, we don't, we're going to murder them all, we're not, okay, this is the mother of all wars, then it's not. and people continue to just pay $5 and $6 for diesel, $4 or $5 for a gallon of gasoline, I can promise you they can run every communist they want, and the normie voter is going to run for them or vote for them. We don't ever win when we're in power. We don't ever win on look how radical they are. We always, because we have to run on that because we haven't followed through on what we promised people we were going to do. We need to come home. Either it's time, frankly, to number two or get off the pot over there, and either we're going to vaporize the Iranian regime or it's time to come home now and win the war here at home, or we're going to get annihilated in these midterms. That's what's going to happen, and that's the choice, and it's time to make it now.
Yeah, I agree, and it was time to make it a couple of months ago, but you know, as we continue to barrel toward the general election, and you know, we're seeing a few of these midterms now play out, there is still time. And you know, I posted it was yesterday or the day before that the really big difference, and of course there are many, but right now the most stark difference between Trump's first administration and his second is that his first administration really focused on Americans and American issues. I mean, we had him traversing the country talking about manufacturing, bringing a business back to our shores, the economy, all of these things that were focused on the American dream, the American experience, and the American voter. And that really generated a lot of respect for and loyalty, frankly, to Trump and the whole MAGA movement. But now you have in the second term a lot of failed initiatives like DOGE, like the SAVE Act, and a few other things, the tax plan that went nowhere. And you have this primary focus on the foreign policy and this war in Iran. And people are wondering, well, what are you doing for me? Isn't this president supposed to represent me as an American?
This is an important point. And I know you've seen, I mean, I have been on the absolute front lines against the anti-Semitism attempting to infest the right. I mean, I've lost friendships over standing up to this. I'm disgusted by it. I think it's vile. I think it's from the pit of hell. But if you are worried about anti-Semitism infesting the right now, boy, howdy. Let me tell you, if we get annihilated in these midterms, let me tell you, annihilated means they have a one-seat majority. Everybody wants to say, well, we've redistricted. There's not a lot of places they can win. That's true. I mean, so we couldn't possibly lose 40 House seats like we did Trump's first midterm. And that's actually pretty typical historically. You know, with a couple of exceptions, Bush after 9/11, Biden got a tie in 2022. But for the most part, presidents, after they get elected in both parties, pretty much get poll-axed in the next midterm election. That's pretty typical. And so there's been too much redistricting now that they can't get that kind of a wave, but they don't need one. If they have like a 2 or 3 seat majority, it's going to be what it looks like when we have like a 40 seat majority. They're not like us. There aren't mansions and cinemas and stuff there to save us anymore. You can see now what has happened when Manchin basically represented the last of the old Democratic Party that you completely disagreed with, but you didn't think hated your guts. He was the last of it. What's left now is literally a color revolution of Islamists and demoniacs. But I repeat myself. That's what's left now. And so any power they get, I look to the state of that's north of me in Minnesota. Well, they have 1 or 2 seat majority in the state legislature with Tim Walz as governor, and they went full color revolution in 1 year. That's what's going to happen if they get power this time. So any L is catastrophic. And I think that when if you're worried about anti-Semitism now on the right, if you're worried about what you're seeing in your young men now on the right, how about we lose a midterm election because, quote, we were literally fighting an ongoing, never-ending Middle East war for Israel that with unachievable goals. And Israel is doing great. The Iranian regime has been greatly diminished. Their people are fairly unified. And over here, we're facing impeachment, scandal, subpoenas for Trump, Rubio, Hegseth, RFK. Every cabinet official you like or care about is getting impeached, not just Trump. And now the median age of first-time homebuyers, instead of 42, all right, because the bond markets went nuts, and so now your interest rates are now at 8%, And so it went from 42, which is the worst ever, to 44, 45. You're still paying $4 or $5 in gas. I mean, that it's like that's like an RSS feed for Candace Owens and Nick Fuentes and Tucker Carlson. Just in fact, just tell them. I mean, just they couldn't possibly bot farm a listenership like we are, like we will create for them if we continue down this road. We have to prioritize America. We cannot stand with Israel. We can't stand with Canada. We can't stand if we don't prioritize America. Everybody within the sound of my voice right now, I detest Iran. I'd be fine if we woke up tomorrow and found out that Trump killed every last member of the IRGC. I'd pop the top and say every time a member of the IRGC dies, an angel gets his wings. Okay? But the reality is right now, the worldview here at home that you're watching from WNBA coaches and Michigan Senate candidates is way more of a threat to everyone within the sound of my voice than Iran is. This is like the line in The Patriot where Mel Gibson's character says, why would I trade one tyrant 1,000 miles away for 1,000 tyrants 1 mile away? That's where we are right now. We have to come home and win the war here.
So well said. And I couldn't agree more, because we can't stand with foreign priorities if we can't even stand up, and we're so weak at home that we don't even have a cohesive together nation to be able to then go and be a leader on the foreign stage. And so Trump, the administration, and especially the whole of the GOP needs to focus on American issues. And they're running out of time. I mean, we've been saying this, you know, for the last 2 years of the Trump administration, that that he needs to focus on these priorities. And it seems like, and I've been saying this, you know, ad nauseum for regular listeners, that the GOP just doesn't want to govern. And that's become incredibly clear.
Issue with the president. I think the issue with the president is he has more power and freedom to wield power on the foreign stage than he does here at home. Mm-hmm. And he's in a party. Some of it's his own fault, frankly, with too many bad endorsements for too many years. But this was also who the Republican Party was before him. And yeah, the Republican Party on a national level, in many cases, can't really govern, because the thing that they have that we're afraid of is the exact opposite over here. We have a collage, like a menagerie of worldviews that are all collected in opposition to what Democrats want to do, but not really an affirmation of what we want to do instead. And that's why we're great as a minority, and we're terrible often as a majority when we actually have to govern.
Absolutely. And there has to be a paradigm shift within conservatism to not just be principled losers and have no idea how to be in the majority. But that's going to take a worldview shift. And meanwhile, you have people like Francesca Hung, who describes having a white son as being, quote, in proximity to whiteness. I mean, you know, she's saying all of these things out loud. You can talk about socialism, you can talk about Marxism, you can talk about all of these things that are terrible worldviews on the left. But when our own party is not even focused on making the American experience affordable, then what happens with young people is that they don't get necessarily, and even the average voter of any age is not an ideological voter. They're a very pragmatic, practical voter. And so they're going to look and say, well, what has the party done for me lately? And if they haven't done anything, then they're going to be so frustrated with that that they're going to move over to looking for other practical solutions. And I don't even see anyone, not even just the GOP candidates, Steve, but I don't even see anybody really on our side among conservative prominent commentators doing anything but pointing out the problems. Nobody's providing solutions.
Well, we don't do solutions very good because of what I just said. And, you know, the Florida Republican Party never did solutions very good either until it had a Red Caesar, right? Someone who essentially just took the reins of power by the throat and said, come follow me. Okay, that's essentially what he's done there. And it's hard to do that on a federal level. You know, it's a way more mass. It's hard to do it on a governor level. So it's amazing what Ron has done. But it's 20 times harder on a federal level with the size of the bureaucracy, the entrenchment of bureaucrats, things of that nature. And when you're in a party where one of your reddest states, Utah, elects a John Curtis, who's out there advocating for amnesty, and knifing your own base, this is where we are.
Yeah, and it's really scary. And so hopefully not just the voters will wake up, but the entire conservative base will promote more solutions and actually get some things done, because we are running out of time until November, and that's going to be a critical juncture and turning point for this country. So we need to pray. We need to vote the best way possible, but we need to absolutely be praying for the future of our nation. Steve, really appreciate it. You can follow him on X. We'll be right back with more.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back, and we're still talking about this rise of democratic socialism and the fact that the GOP just simply does not want to govern. And, you know, the famous Andrew Breitbart saying that politics is downstream from culture. Well, culture is downstream from worldview. And this, to me, is the biggest problem right now overall that we have to address, is the worldview behind what the Democrat Socialists and the Democrat Party have been trying to do for years. I mean, this is nothing new, but also what the GOP is failing to do, which is to preserve a biblical worldview. And they are going further and further into this kind of populism and frankly, a liberal sort of nonsense, when they've basically abandoned a lot of the social issues other than a few key things. And I give them credit for things like continuing to prioritize having no men and women sports, and thankfully some now major pushback against the hideousness of the trans movement. But we've lost a lot of ground on some other priorities, even including pro-life in the wake of the Dobbs decision and overturning Roe versus Wade. There's been a lot of work that's done, but not enough. We certainly, as a Republican Party platform, have all but abandoned the definition of a family, which of course comes from natural law, the laws of nature and of nature's God, and the biblical worldview, and also just the reality to which we are presented, that the only possibility for human conception and for children is from one man and one woman, and it must be in the context of marriage morally. And we're not standing up for those things in the greater civil society. The church should, and the church often is too timid to speak up with boldness on these things. But it all goes back to a worldview issue. And so when you're seeing some of these younger people who are the pragmatic voters, and even some of, you know, the wide swath of the normie voter, as they're kind of called online, when they're not as concerned with the overriding worldview issues of either side or the trajectory of the country, and they're more concerned just about the pragmatic daily issues of grocery prices, the economy, gas prices, all of that, you know, the forever wars, then we really have to ask and answer the question, where are we at with promoting a worldview culturally in society so that, like the founders, we can understand that this nation is only as great as it honestly is good? So let's welcome in my good friend Eric Metaxas, who is an author and theologian and also has a brand new book out that you absolutely have to read called Revolution, and talking about the history of the founding of this great country. And Eric, you know, I just think that worldview really needs to be more of an emphasis, not just for the Republican kind of godless populace, because they don't have and share the biblical worldview generally, but for people like, for example, Speaker Mike Johnson, who himself is a very sincere, dedicated Christian. He needs to not just talk about the dangers of socialism, but talk about overall the biblical worldview of what has made and must continue to make America great. Otherwise, I think we're losing this battle on a much bigger and foundational scale than just the candidates and fighting against socialism. And good morning.
Well, thanks for having me on, Jenna. And of course, you know, I agree totally. But I think, let me say this. The reason I wrote my book, Revolution, is because I feel like we're always focused on what's happening today, today, today. Obviously, we need to care about what's happening today. But sometimes it's like you want to get a kid away from the TV, take him by the hand or away from his screen, and say, step out with me onto the back porch, breathe the air, look at the trees. Like, we need to get out of our kind of, you know, our focus on what's happening now and breathe and kind of take a measure of where we are. And I think part of the reason I wrote the book, I mean, in a way, it's the main reason, is that if you do not understand the stories of how America came into being, if you don't know the people, what they believed, how they behaved, what, in a way, you can't possibly know where we are now or how far we've drifted. I think that, and and I should say, you know, it should be fun, right? It's kind of like, you know, watching a great film or something like that. It takes you out of yourself. And I feel really strongly that we need to rejoice in the stories of the revolution. And when you know that, you cannot help but have a different picture of where we are now. I think sometimes, even when we use phrases like biblical worldview, of course I agree with that, but it's like, it just sounds like I've got to learn stuff and I've got to learn. Biblical worldview just comes from, you know, spending time with God, singing songs with God, hearing the story. It doesn't need to be so on the nose. And I feel like maybe because it's August, people need an escape. I hope they'll read my book at the beach or wherever they are, because it really changes your, it's like a reset. Let me put it that way. It's like a reset. And you think, oh, okay. I forgot about this. Now I understand what I'm fighting for. Because I really do think people like you and me, we're in the weeds a lot. And we need to breathe. We need to look at the trees, listen to the birds. To me, that's the story of the revolution. You just think, oh, I forgot about this. I remember this from, you know, fifth grade or eighth grade. This is beautiful. These people are beautiful people. I want to be like these people, you know. So I kind of feel, I guess, you know, I wanted the book to come out in the summer because it was the 250th anniversary. But I also thought, I want people to read it and enjoy it, because it is like, it's a reset. We need a reset as a nation. And you and I have talked about this. The whole nation needs a reset in terms of, like, we've just drifted so far away from these foundational principles and things. And somehow, as a nation, we need together to relearn, like, where we came from and who these players were and why they did what they did. And I personally feel like, you know, when I read the story of Nathan Hale, I mean, that's one of my chapters in my book, you cannot help but be inspired. You think, oh, my gosh, I want to be like this young man, this amazing young man who said, my only regret is that I have one life to give for my country. You just want to cry at the nobility. And you know, he was a profound Christian. Most of the folks involved in this generation were profound Christians. There's no deist. It's just like baloney, the deist thing. It's like, it's not like I write about that very much in the book, but when you just read the stories, you're thinking, where are these deists that everybody keeps talking about? It almost seems
right.
Comical.
I mean,
so I'm kind of, you know, obsessed with this idea that we need to get away from the moment we're in and just enjoy the story, these stories again. It's the reset that I keep mentioning.
Yeah, and I think that's there's a lot of wisdom in that, in this sense that we need to be encouraged, because a biblical worldview and a truthful view of society doesn't come just from existing. We have to intentionally teach it to our families, to ourselves. We have to
yes,
intentionally be educated in the knowledge of God and of truth. I mean, we can't just, you know, sit here and say, well, through osmosis, I'll just somehow come and arrive at the truth. And this is why the Bible says to be daily in the Word of God. This is why we have the great cloud of witnesses that has gone before, to say, you know, look at these individuals, what they were facing in their lifetimes, and how they, through faith, believed in the promises of God. God and then acted on those promises so that we don't have to feel like just in our day and age, we're the only ones who have been called to courage and we're the only ones who may have to sacrifice something in our lives, right. That we can be encouraged through the stories of the heroes of the faith. And that includes heroes of the faith, even in our American history. And this is why I love your book. I think it's fantastic. And I was so excited to get a signed copy from you when I got to see you here in Florida a couple of months ago. But I love that the focus and the emphasis is so much on that heroism. Because when you see, and you kind of step back from a 30,000 foot perspective, and you see a lot of these heroes throughout world history, and even and especially right now throughout American history, it becomes less of a concern and a just myopic focus on our daily struggles. But here's the question, though, Eric, is that how do you get the people who are right now, rightfully, I think, discouraged at where we're at in this moment in time, and have them understand that this isn't just about policy, it's also about worldview? Because I want to play a clip for you really quick from this Wisconsin gubernatorial candidate, Democratic Socialist that we've been talking about, Francesca Hung, because this isn't just about Thanksgiving. It's not just about socialism for her. I mean, this is a fully fleshed out socialist Marxist worldview. And she describes, as I was talking to Steve Dace before, having a half white son, because she's Asian, and so her son is apparently half Asian, half white, and she describes her son as, quote, being in proximity to whiteness. Listen to this, cut four.
I wasn't always aware of the struggles of other communities of color, because for me, assimilation always kind of took over. And so I did marry my proximity to whiteness continues, right? My son is biracial. He's half white and half Korean. And I think navigating, you know, what his identity is and then how people perceive him is always at the back of my mind as well.
He's American. Like, can't we just leave it at that, Eric? I mean, this is though the Democrat probable nominee for Wisconsin governor. This isn't just some, you know, random person out there who's screaming on the internet. I mean, this is disgusting.
They're speaking a different language. Look, you have to mock them, Jenna. They are out of their minds. She's talking about communities of color. Anytime anybody uses any phrase like that, laugh in their face and run away, because they're insane. They're totally insane. They don't have a grip on reality, and you have to find it funny, because it's almost unbelievable that they talk like this. She's talking like this. She's chosen to talk like this, to hang out with people for whom this insanity makes some kind of sense. I mean, honestly, this is why I watch Turner Classic Movies, to watch old movies to get away from the madness that we're in. This is why I read old books. This is why I hope people will read my book on the American Revolution. We need a reset. It's like, go back to where people were sane, where they believed in the God of the Bible. They believed in liberty, heroism, dignity, the sanctity of the cause of liberty. These are beautiful, inspiring things that have made this nation. And the idea that we have lunatics like this woman and 1,000 others that are, they're just on, and it's like they're speaking Chinese. Like, I don't know what language they're speaking, who they're talking to. We all know they're crazy, and that's the first thing we have to say. They're nuts. They're crazy. What she's talking about, proximity to whiteness, that's not a thing. That's a made-up lunatic statement, and we have to mock them. We have to just say, listen, honey, you're nuts. Like, sit down, have a cup of tea. We cannot engage them. We're answering a fool according to their folly in this sense. You know, I think the first thing we have to do is make fun of it. Imagine that she is talking about, you know, being triggered by Thanksgiving. And these are people that do not live in the world of reality. My mother, okay, that I talk to every day, she's 92. She grew up in Nazi Germany, when the Soviet Union took over East Germany, she was under Stalinist communism. She escaped at age 17 to come to America. People are actually suffering in this world, living real lives, and crazy people like the woman that whose quote you just made, they don't know what real problems are. They're inventing problems because they are unbelievably spoiled. They're so spoiled by living in America, they have to invent problems. And I just think we have to we have to be real. I keep saying this, but the reason I wrote the book is we need a reset. People need to go back to understand what is America, who are the people that founded America, and for 200 years we've been celebrating them and knowing their stories. Everybody has known the stories of all the people in my book until the last 50 years. In our lifetime, we've drifted away so that you can have people like Mrs. Hong, whatever her name is, just inventing problems, creating this alternative reality, using phrases like proximity to whiteness. We have to laugh in their face and run away. Like, we cannot possibly allow them to drag us into this, you know, it's like this bourgeois gutter. Like, these are not problems. They don't have problems. To be being triggered by Thanksgiving is so lunatic, we have to laugh at it. I mean, if we had a healthy entertainment environment, people would be making fun of this on SNL. I mean, it's just so crazy, right? That they talk this way. That's, to me, the first thing. We've just got to mock it.
100%. And we've got to take a break here, but Eric Metaxas is staying with me through the break so that we can continue to mock and make fun of these people. But the concern, of course, is that these are the people that some discouraged GOP voters and, of course, all of the left is actually going to for solutions. I mean, that's the bizarre reality, is that not everyone in the country is laughing at these people. I mean, this individual is poised to become the Democrat nominee for governor in Wisconsin. I can't emphasize that enough. I mean, this isn't just some fringe lunatic. And so we have to not just make fun of them, but also ask and answer the question, why are people going to individuals like this for solutions in this country instead of the people who actually have their heads on straight? But we're going to talk more about this when we come right back here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning with my special guest, Eric Metaxas. It's been 4 years since the overturning of Roe v. Wade, but tragically, abortions have continued to rise. Today, the abortion pill accounts for more than 60% of all abortions, and last year alone, over 1.1 million babies lost their lives. That's why the work of Preborn Network Clinics is more urgent than ever. Every day, mothers facing unplanned pregnancies walk through Preborn's doors searching for hope. Instead of pressure and fear, they're met with love. Through a free ultrasound, mothers meet their baby for the very first time.
It was like the beginning of my healing journey. They do an ultrasound, and that's when everything changed. Because when I saw my baby, and when I heard her heartbeat, that was it.
Just $28 sponsors one ultrasound. $140 helps rescue five babies. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or visit preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back, and I'm here with my special guest, Eric Metaxas, who is an author and a brilliant theologian as well. And we are talking about the rise of a democratic socialism and Marxism that, you know, we kind of thought we'd seen maybe the peak of all of the insanity during the Biden years. And then thankfully, with the return of Trump to the White House, you know, a quelling of a lot of this nonsense. But it's coming back in the form of a lot of these candidates that are running for office in a wide variety of public offices on the state and the federal level as just completely avowed socialists and Marxists. And the question of why there are so many Americans of all ages who are turning to socialists for the answers instead of turning to actual practical solutions is, I think, Eric, because a lot of our own leaders are not actually providing or implementing the solutions that we elected them in 2024 with Donald Trump, and then, you know, with the rest of Congress and on the state level that we elected them to do. And one of the appointees who I was not in favor of, and, you know, everybody thought I was, you know, I was just being, you know, kind of a dissenter to Trump at the time, but who has been very disappointing, is DHS Secretary Mark Wayne Mullen. And he basically wants to allow foreigners to simply, and illegals, to simply stay here and permanently steal American jobs as cheap labor. And we don't really have a number on how many deportations, when we were promised, you know, this mass deportation to say we want to close the border, get our country back, have Americans working American jobs, have a cultural renewal, hopefully have a spiritual revival. That's on the church, of course, not on the state. But this has been very disappointing to have our own leaders refusing to implement solutions. So, of course, people are going, you know, to other places and sadly another party for possible solutions to what they perceive as the greatest problems. But here's what DHS Secretary Mark Wayne Mullen said about this. This is Cut 5.
On it. If we're looking to grow our economy, then we need to look at making more permanent solutions on this and getting the work, but the employers involved in the system. In order to do that, though, that takes coordination between labor. Our unions still have a say in this, guys. We got to get labor involved. We got to get industry involved. And we got to fill out where the holes are created, because this narrative that it steals American jobs is true in some industries. It's not true for all industries. And we need to pay attention and be sensitive to that as we move forward, because it is America first. We want to take care of Americans first. It's our economy. It's our homeland. But there's a way to utilize labor where we're not having the participation rate we need to, and we can plug those holes.
So his solution is to have more work visas and to not actually follow through with the plan of America First. I mean, this is just stupid, and no wonder, Eric, that a lot of the GOP base is really frustrated with the GOP leadership, because it's just not there.
For saying what he said, I mean, he should be thrilled if he does not get fired for the tone deafness. That's really what it amounts to. It's a slap in the face. Every American mm-hmm. that voted for President Trump voted for mass deportations. That's what we voted for. And if you don't get that, you shouldn't be in the administration. Or you should certainly keep your mouth shut, because when he said that, it is completely disheartening to those of us who say the number one problem we have is that the lunatic Democrats flooded our nation with illegals, with people that don't share our values, with people that they cynically brought in, you know, to bring about this new world order of socialism and insanity. So Mullins is just, you know, a classic example of a bureaucrat who should have kept his mouth shut. And if he doesn't get fired for this, I mean, it's amazing to me just the level of tone deafness. And I think mm-hmm. that, you know, a lot of I hope, honestly, that the blowback that he's getting for his comments will be a warning to everybody in the administration. The people are angry. You better do what you're elected for. You better. And, you know, Jenna, I say this over and over. We're in a war. We're in the third existential crisis of our history. The first the American Revolution, the second the Civil War. We're in the third one now. It's an existential crisis, which means for all the marbles, we lose America. America doesn't just, you know, like these four-year cycles. No, no, no. We lose the nation. If we lose the war in which we're in right now, we lose everything, and we are still in it. Electing President Trump, his dodging that bullet at Butler, that enables us to keep fighting. So it's not over. It should be over, but it's not over. But honestly, we're in a war. And in this war, we've got a long way to go. We have many more battles to fight. Everywhere I look, you could talk about any subject. Even actually, my book has been on the bestseller list of the New York Times for 7 weeks, which is unbelievable success. You still cannot find it in most Barnes and Noble stores. Why is that? Because we have leftists in charge in many corporations. They are fighting harder than we're fighting. They want to suppress. I mean, what could be simpler? What could be more? What would ostensibly be less troubling than a book about the American Revolution? But to them, a true accounting of the Christian founding of the United States of America is a threat. So even though they can make a lot of money by putting it in the piles where they put all the bestsellers, they're squelching my book because they're dedicated to their cause. They don't want people to be red-pilled. They don't want people to fall in love with America and say, oh, I missed it. They are fighting hard for their worldview. So when somebody like Mullins stupidly says something like that, you realize he's not a warrior. He doesn't understand we're in a war for America, for liberty, for God's values that led to this country. And, you know, I hope he learns his lesson. But anybody in the Trump administration that is not on fire for this stuff, that does not have the fire that you have or I have or Stephen Miller has or Sebastian Gorka, well, you've got people that are warriors. And then you have all these other people that they do not get it any more than Kristi Noem got it. Mullins, you know, to say those things, to not understand where we are, we have to get rid of those people, or we have to teach those people this is what we want. And if you don't give us this, we the people, by the way, we're the government. We're the ones that decide what happens. We elected you to do what we want you to do. This is what we want you to do. And if you're not doing that, you're going to be out. And so I don't know if President Trump is going to get rid of him, but for saying those things, it's just basically what we're talking about, that there's a tone deafness. There are people who are still even in this administration, they don't get it. They're not warriors. Mm-hmm. And Trump needs 100% warriors around him, people who understand we're in an existential battle for the soul of America, and it's a multi-front war. I fight it ideologically. Writing a book on the revolution is about helping us understand what is liberty? What are our liberties? What is it we're fighting for? Where do our liberties come from? Every American used to understand this. If we don't get back to understanding this stuff and in celebrating who we are, how can we possibly, you know, fight to keep it? So obviously, to me, I'm I'm hopeful, but we get disheartened when we hear from people like that saying really. I mean, it's tone deaf. It's just a level of tone deafness, and I think the base has to punch back and say we are not going to tolerate anybody in the administration that is not doing what needs to be done. We don't have a lot of time. The midterms are coming up, so you know I'm glad you're one of the warriors in this. You always have been.
Well, thank you. And I'm glad that you are one of the warriors as well. And you're absolutely right. I mean, these types of individuals who get in into these positions of power through appointment or election, and then they do nothing with the position that they are filling. I mean, from, you know, and Mullen is just one example. I mean, we can turn to all of the idiots in Congress who are just, you know, sitting around. I mean, leader John Thune, who's saying, well, you know, we don't have the votes for the Save America Act. Well, that's his job, is to get the votes so that we can actually continue to push through the agenda that the American people voted for. And it wasn't just voting for Trump's agenda. It was voting overall for a conservative priority and an America First priority that spanned through to all of the people who got elected or reelected to Congress. But when we have leaders who just sit by and we can fairly say that the Democrat socialists want to be world changers and America changers more than the conservatives, and sometimes, unfortunately, even more than the Christians, then that's where we have more problems than we do solutions. And so, Eric, really appreciate your time this morning. Always love having you on the program. You can get his book at ericmetaxas.com. And of course, that book is Revolution. And we have to continue to push not just for the to identify the problems, but push for solutions and also push for the people in office through elections or appointments who understand this and who are willing to stand up and fight with courage. That's the only way that we're going to protect and preserve America through 2026 and beyond. As always, you can reach me and my team, Jenna at AFR.net. Preborn has rescued over 400,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com/AFR.